أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، لا حول ولا قوة إلا بالله العلي العظيم، والصلاة والسلام على أشرف الأنبياء والمرسلين وخاتم النبيين وسيد المرسلين أبي القاسم محمد. وعلى آل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين المظلومين، لا سيما بقية الله في الأرضين، ولعن الله الدائم على أعدائهم أجمعين، من ليلتنا هذه إلى يوم الدين. السلام على الحسين وعلى علي بن الحسين وعلى أولاد الحسين وعلى أصحاب الحسين. Respected ulama, elders, sisters, brothers in Islam and Iman. Tonight is the ninth night of the month of Muharram. It is a night of the day which is known as At-Tasu'a, the ninth day. And in the calendar of the lovers of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, the ninth day is a day of grieving and mourning. Because it is a day of grieving and mourning for the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam themselves. According to the traditions we receive from the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam, the ninth day triggered a change in the atmosphere in Karbala. Until then, there was a possibility that perhaps some people, some Shi'as from Iraq, might have changed their mind. They might have escaped from Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad, and then they might come and shore up and assist the army of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. But on the ninth day, it became clear that no more help was going to come from Kufa. By the ninth day, the army on the other side had amassed in its full force, and it became clear that the battle was going to be won, at least on the apparent level, in favor of the enemy army. And so we're told that this was a day of great happiness for the enemies of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam. It was a day of happiness for Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad and Umar ibn Sa'd la'anatullahi alayhima, because they knew that their goal that they were trying to accomplish would definitely be accomplished. In fact, we know that according to history, Ashura and its tragedy was going to happen on Tasu'a, because now they saw no need to hold back. And it was in the daytime on the day of Tasu'a that they actually started to make the first attack, until Imam Hussein alayhi salam sent his brother to go seek respite, to seek some time and a delay, and to push it off until the next day. But for us, tomorrow is a day of sadness. Our maraji have told us that it's important that we don't do things that are in contrary with the spirit of mourning that should take place on the day of Tasu'a. And we've gathered here in this majlis tonight to try to perform our duty to mourning and commemorating what took place. It's an honor to be called to the majlis of Abu Abdullah al-Husayn alayhi salam. We thank Allah Ta'ala for this great opportunity. I would like to remind myself and all of you of the honor of being able to shed a tear for the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam. According to a famous hadith, even a sigh of grief for the Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam is considered to be a tasbih with Allah. One sigh. And according to another hadith from the Ahlul Bayt, that everything has its reward, which is limited in some way. For example, if you do something, then you get this much reward. If you do something else, you get that much reward. But there is one act that you can do that has no limit when it comes to the reward, and that is shedding a tear in mourning for Imam Hussein alayhi salam. So inshallah, this is a night for us to come and mourn and to learn from the lessons, the great lessons that took place and unfolded on the scene on the day of Ashura. Over these evenings, we've had the great tawfiq from Allah to try to look at some of the very important perspectives that Imam Hussein alayhi salam gave us. A perspective on tolerance, a perspective on happiness, a perspective on sadness and grief, and other topics as well. Tonight, I would like to begin by quoting a tradition we have from our fifth Imam alayhi salam. Imam Baqir says that one time his great-grandfather, Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam, was passing through Karbala. And when he went there, he stopped with his army and he made a comment. He said that this place right here is a place which is manahu rikabin wa masari'u ushaqin. شُهَدَاءُ لَا يَسْبِقُهُمْ مَنْ كَانَ قَبْلَهُمْ وَلَا يَلْحَقُهُمْ مَنْ بَعْدَهُمْ. He said that this land of Karbala is a very special place. It's a place in which the ushaq will fall. This is the place where they are going to be slain. The martyrs will be buried here, and there never has been martyrs like them, nor will there ever be any martyrs after them. They are unique in who they are. I want to focus on this word, ashaq. Ashaq, as you know, is a plural of the form ashiq. Ashiq means one who is in love. Or maybe a better way of translating it would be to say somebody who is madly in love or incredibly in love. It comes from the Arabic word ashaqa. Ashaqa is a type of plant which is a vine-like creature. When it grows and it finds something that it's going to surround, and it starts wrapping itself around that thing. It goes around and around and around. It gets tighter and tighter and tighter. And in Arabic is a very descriptive language. When they wanted to make a word which would describe a type of love which is extreme, a type of love which, you know, is deep, which penetrates the entire being, they derived the word from the example of this plant, and they called it ishq. And the one who has this is called ashiq. One of the characteristics of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, and those who were martyred with him, and all those who were present in Karbala, is that they were filled with ishq, they were filled with love. But love of what? Love of Allah. And when it comes to this concept of love, it's a perspective that's very important for us to look at. We're trying to understand, you see, as we get closer and closer to Ashura, it's very important that we try to understand who were these people who were on the other side. Nowadays, we think of them as being, you know, the worst of people, and, you know, the ones who deserve all the la'an, and we you know, pray that Allah removes His mercy from them. And they were monsters and beasts, and they were. But we have to understand what kind of identity did they have, and what was their ideology, what were they thinking, what was their psychology that led them to do what they did. And I think we can do that by looking at this word love, because just like Imam Hussein alayhi salam and his soldiers and his companions had love of Allah, these enemy soldiers had love of something as well. And we can get this from the words of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. He says, "Inna nasa abidu dunya." People are slaves of the dunya. وَالدِّينُ لَعَقٌ عَلَىٰ أَلْسِنَتِهِمْ. You all know these words, you've heard them your entire lives. This is the time to think about them and reflect on them. The religion is something which is just on the tip of their tongues. You know when you want to taste some food, what do? You kind of just stick it on the tip of your tongue, you moist your tongue with it, and you get a sense of the flavor of it. You don't actually swallow it. It doesn't become part of you. The people in general are like this, that deen for them is just sort of a cultural sort of thing. Something that they kind of stick with just because, you know, they're born that way maybe, or, you know, they fit into a certain group. But what happens is that فَإِذَا مُحِصُوا بِالْبَلَاءِ قَلَّ الدَّيَانُونَ when they are tried, when they are given some sort of difficulty, that religion goes out the door and they follow their beloved, and their beloved is the dunya. So brothers and sisters, I'd like to take a look at this concept, that on one hand we had an army whose love, whose ishq is for Allah, and on the other hand you had these thousands and tens of thousands of people whose love was for the dunya. Now, this concept of love of dunya, it's something that it's good for us to look into and try to understand at a deeper level. Why is it that people are infatuated and passionate about the material world, the dunya? Well, if you look at what Islamic psychology teaches us, it teaches us that a human being is born in a certain way, with a certain innate nature, a certain natural state. All human beings are born that way. In Arabic, it's called fitra. One of the aspects of human innate nature is that they love themselves. You can ask yourself this question, do I love myself? And the answer is that, yeah, I mean, obviously, right? I love myself, sure, yeah, of course I love myself. Right? You go to a child and you say that, do that child love themselves? Right? Do they look out for themselves? Do they care for themselves? The answer is yeah. Okay, sometimes they might do things which are foolish, right? But generally speaking, they love themselves. Right? It's something that all of us are, that love is placed in us. It's something which is natural to our being. Okay, so that's step one. Now, if you love yourself, then the corollary of that, meaning the consequence and the byproduct of that, is that you love those things which bring profit to yourself. Those things that benefit you as well. Why do I love my food? Why do I love my home? Why do I love my car? Why do I love my family? Why do I love my intellect and my sharp wit and my tongue and so many other things? For some people, why do they love their looks? And all? Because they profit by those things. They benefit by them. They are a source of happiness for them. And so the natural course of action, when a human being is put in this world, as they get older and older and they make more use of all these material objects which have assembled themselves in order for a human being to use, what happens? They start to grow fond of them. They start to become attached to them. They start to love them. Now this was God's plan. Right? God wanted us to be in this world and He wanted us to use these things. But He wanted us to use them in the right way. And when we go to the words of the Quran, the words of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam, one of the very important topics that's covered in so many different aspects with so many riwayat and so many traditions and so many ayat is this great concern that they have for us, that God forbid that we should let these attachments to the dunya take over our hearts. That becomes the dunya and the material world becomes the object in which we wrap our vine of love around. It's a very grave concern that they had for us. That's why we see in the words of the Ahlul Bayt that sometimes they would disparage the dunya. Okay, this is a whole topic on its own. What is the philosophy of the dunya according to Ahlul Bayt? I just want to make reference to a few points here. Sometimes they would disparage the dunya. You've heard these traditions before. Amir al-Mu'minin alayhi salam, for example, one time, he says that if you want to know what the value of this dunya, this material world is in my eyes, okay, meaning that part of the dunya which you consider independently of God, that part of the dunya where it becomes your ma'ashuk, the object of your passion and love independently of God, he says the value of it, I'm going to give you an example. Imagine that there is a bone of a pig Now, the bone of a pig is something which is useless to most people, especially Muslims, right? Because of the prohibitions we have. Imagine that there is a bone of a pig in the hand of a leper. That's what he says. The dunya for me has less value than that bone right there. And so many other traditions as well too. But on the other hand, we see from Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam something which almost indicates the opposite of it. There was somebody who was cursing the dunya near him, right? He was sort of, you know, like, you know, cursing it out, you know, saying, oh, this dunya, you know, I don't want anything to do with it, right? And Imam alayhi salam saw that this was something where this person's viewpoint needed to be corrected. Right? It's not the case that we shouldn't involve ourselves with this dunya, that Islam calls us to just, you know, just get out and just find a hermit, a home, you know, live like a hermit in the wilderness or something like that. No. And so he says that this dunya is Masjidu Ahibba'illah. It's a place of sujood for the lovers of Allah. Meaning the lovers of Allah are also in this dunya as well too. They're making use of it, but they're making use of it in the right way. They're using this dunya as a way to submit to God. They humble themselves in front of Allah. وَمَهْبِطُ وَحْيِ اللَّهِ It's the place where the revelation of God has descended. وَمَتْجَرُ أَوْلِيَاءِ اللَّهِ It's like a shopping mall for those who are close to Allah. They go, they look around, and they pick and choose the good things that they want to acquire from this dunya. اِكْتَسَبُوا فِيهَا الْجَنَّةِ Eventually they buy jannah from this dunya, meaning that through this dunya. وَرَبِحُ فِيهَا الرَّحْمَةِ And the profit that they get from this dunya is the special mercy of God. This is what the dunya can do for you. And so brothers and sisters, what we see that, you know, on that day of Ashura, those who were assembled on the enemy army, they were people who had been tested. They had been tested and they failed the test. It's a very interesting incident that took place leading up to the day of Ashura, according to our books of hadith. There was a group of jinns. You know, jinns we know are both Muslims and non-Muslims. So there's a group of jinns who were lovers of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam, and they came to know of what was going to transpire with Imam Hussein alayhi salam and his army. So the leader of them, he goes to the Imam alayhi salam and he says that we are, to paraphrase, we are at your service. Just, you stay where you are. Just give us the word, we're gonna take care of the situation. You know, we're jinns after all, right? We'll obliterate them and they won't even know what came to them. If that's what you're after, we're there for you. And Imam Hussein tells him something very insightful, very interesting. First of all, he tells him, he corrects him. He says that, نَحْنُ أَخْدَرُ عَلَى ذَلِكَ We are more capable of doing that than even you are. Because after all, Imam Hussein alayhi salam is the Waliullah, Khalifatullah fil ard. He has power, he has authority over every grain and every atom on the earth. If he wants, he could do it that way. But that's not the way of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam. And then he says one of the philosophies behind Ashura, and this is for all of us, not just for the people who were there at that time. He says, by what means will the people be tested if this event doesn't take place? By what means will they be tested? And we see that on the day of Ashura, they were severely tested. I'm going to say a few stories of what took place. Now these stories, I'm not somebody to just say stories just to like sort of pass the time or something, right? But as we get closer to Ashura, these are stories which really, you know, we need to think about, we need to ponder upon them. There's lessons in there for us. I want to tell you first about the story of Malik ibn Nadr al-Arhabi, or Arhabi, and Dahak ibn Abdullah al-Mashriqi. These are names that maybe are not frequently talked about. Malik and Dahak were friends, and it just so happens that probably in Karbala this actually took place before Ashura. They ride together and they come to Imam Hussein alayhi salam, they greet him, they pray for him as well too. And they tell him that people have gathered against you. They kind of want to warn him about what's about to come. And Imam Hussein alayhi salam, you know, is one who is connected with Allah. everything that takes place, he sees himself in the presence of Allah. And so he responds, he says, حَسْبِيَ اللَّهُ وَنِعْمَ الْوَكِيلِ. Allah is sufficient for me, and he's the best of those whom we can rely upon. And then he asked them, he said that, why don't you join me? You come, now you're here, you join me. It's very interesting the responses that they have. Malik, immediately he sort of makes an excuse. He says that, I have some debts that I need to pay off. And if I stay with you, then you know who's going to pay off those debts? Right? So excuse me, I'll be on my way. You can do your battle, you can fight your fight. I'm not going to be part of it. The hawk story is a little bit more interesting. The hawk says that, I will join you. I will fight with you. But I have my own business to take care of as well. So I'm going to make it a conditional sort of support. I'm going to be with you until the point where I see there's no point in being with you because you're going to lose. And that's when, with your permission, I will abandon you. And the Imam al-Islam agrees to this condition. On the day of Ashura, Bahaq ibn Abdullah al-Mashriqi is fighting with the Imam al-Islam until he starts to see some of his friends become shaheed in the way of Allah. And then he reminds Imam Hussein al-Islam of that condition. Imam Hussein al-Islam gives him the permission. He goes to a tent in which his horse was hidden. He rides the horse and he gallops away. They chase him, but they're not able to get him. And he becomes one of those individuals who then reports on what took place in Karbala. Sometimes you might wonder, how do we know what took place? Right? Well, one of the reasons is because of individuals like him. My brothers and sisters, imagine now, Dahaq ibn Abdullah al-Mashriqi, now, right, when he sees the status of the shuhada of Karbala and how close he was to be able to achieve that. But how his attachment to the dunya kept him from doing that. We have another example of Hirthama. Hirthama was, again, somebody who should have known better. Hirthama was one of the companions, one of the followers of Imam Ali alayhi salam. He lived with Imam Ali, he heard his sermons, he saw his greatness, he saw his nobility. But he ended up on the army that was fighting the son of the Imam Ali alayhi salam. Until what happened is that on the day of Ashura, he sees a tree, and the tree reminds him of something. He goes back into his thoughts and he says that, aha, there was a time many years back that I was with Imam Ali alayhi salam, I was in his army, and we came to this tree. He got off, he took some of the soil from this land, he smelled it, and he said that there will be people who will be buried here, and they will enter Jannah bighayri hisab, without any hisab, straight into heaven. And he says that at that time I doubted the words of the Imam. I'm like, what is he saying? And I went to home and I was talking to my wife, he says. And his wife was a staunch Shia of Imam al-Islam. And I told her, I said that, you know, we stopped in this one land next to a tree, random place, and Amir al-Mu'mineen, he took a bit of, you know, soil and he said these words. And his wife was very upset with him. She said, how can you say this? If Amir al-Mu'mineen alayhi salam says it, then most definitely it's true. And all this came to the forefront. He was reminded of it. And then he realizes, he says that, well, who are the people who are going to be buried here? It's not going to be the army of Umar ibn Sa'd. It's going to be the army of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. So he starts to go forward. He starts to cross the line. He could have become another Hur. But what happens is he goes to the Imam. He says to him this incident that took place. And the Imam has one question for him. He says that, okay, Hirthama, هَلْ أَنْتَ مَعْنَا أَمْ عَلَيْنَا? Are you with us or are you against us? And he thinks about it and he says that, لَا مَعَكُمْ وَلَا عَلَيْكُمْ. I'm neither with you nor against you. You see, I have daughters in Kufa. And if I were to join with you and fight with you, then there's a possibility that Ubaydullah ibn Ziyad would find out and then he would go and persecute my family in Kufa. So therefore, excuse me, and Imam Hussein alayhi salam tells him that, Hirthama, I have some advice for you. Distance yourself from this place right here. Go far away. Find some place where you will never hear the cry of our help when we make that cry. هَلْ مِنْ مُغِيثٍ يُغِيثٍ. Because if somebody hears that cry and they go, don't come to our assistance, then definitely they will enter into the fire of hell. Brothers and sisters, did he not see that Imam Hussein alayhi salam was there with his women and with the children of the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam? Did he not know that Imam Hussein alayhi salam also had daughters as well too? Did he not know that Imam Hussein alayhi salam was so attached to his family? I don't know if you're aware of this, but in history it's recorded that he actually composed poetry praising his family and showing his love for them. He says that inni uhibbu daran, I love a home in which there is rabab and sukina. And if I were to spend all of my wealth on them, then nobody could ever, you know, chastise me and sort of tell me I did something wrong. Meaning that he loved them for the sake of Allah. Did he know this? But see, his attachments were such that they prevented him from doing the right. They blinded him at the time that he was tested. There are so many examples we could say, but let me give you one example from the side of the army of Imam Hussein. Again, I'm not just storytelling for the sake of storytelling. Each one of these is giving us a lesson. It's something to think about. These are subtle matters. These are people who might have considered themselves Shias. People who might have attended, you know, the lectures and followed the fiqh of Imam Ali alayhi salam and would have considered themselves lovers of the Ahlul Bayt, but they made the wrong decision because of what? Because of their attachment and their ishq for the dunya. On the other hand, we have the example of Nafi' ibn Hilal. Nafi' ibn Hilal was considered the best archer among all the army of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. He was a very young person. One of the outstanding incidents that took place that really shows us, you know, his level of love of Allah was one of the nights leading up to Ashura. The situation in the camp of Imam Hussein was very severe. There was a lot of thirst. People were very thirsty. So what does he do? He and a group of men, they fight their way to the Furat River. You know, it's not just on the day of Ashura where this took place. It took place on one of the evenings leading up to that as well too. And when he gets there, the person guarding the river happens to be a family member of his. They go back. So he says that, okay, you're my family member, and you know, because of our family relationships, you can have some water. But you can't take any back for Imam Hussein alayhi salam, nor can you take any back for the other people of the camp. This is a test. Immediately, Nafi' says that if it's the case that Imam Hussein and the other companions will go thirsty, then I'm going to go thirsty as well too. Right? He makes the right decision. And on the day of Ashura, Nafi' was married, but they hadn't gotten fully married yet. And according to some reports, on the day of Ashura, as he was going towards the battlefield to fight, definitely leading to his shahada, his wife runs out of the tent and goes to him and starts to cry. Because she sees her husband, whom she's so attached to, up leaving, and he's not going to come back again. She knows that. And it's a very touching scene on the day of Ashura. Imagine that this newly wed couple, the bride, is there crying with her husband. And Imam Hussein alayhi salam sees this according to the reports, and he sees this and he says that if you wish to go, it's up to you, I release you. But Nafi', despite all that he might see in pursuing that relationship, all the good life that might come in the future, you know, all of this is going through his mind at that time. He makes the right decision for the sake of Allah, for the sake of the Imam alayhi salam. He goes forward and he becomes one of the shuhada of Karbala. Now, the question is, brothers and sisters, that when it comes to this attachment, how do we make sure that we're in this world and we're operating within it, but it doesn't get to the point where this, we get drowned in it, it takes over? Because we're naturally attracted. We said that every human being has this love of themselves and love of those things which please themselves as well too. What instructions do we have? What guidance do we have to be able to lead us to a life where we're not going to be overly attached to the dunya? And this is where there are a number of instructions we have from the Ahlul Bayt alayhi salam, but one of the most important is the act of ibadah. You know, the act of ibadah is one of those things which unfortunately, you know, as people maybe who have been born Muslim, who have been Muslim for many years, sometimes we take it for granted. And we don't realize the honor and the value and the incredible power that lies in ibadah. And how it can be something that leads us to ishq of Allah and prevents us from ishq of the dunya. Inshallah, if Allah gives us the tawfiq, then tomorrow I'd like to explain more about this concept and explain a little bit about the philosophy behind ibadah, in particular salah, because tomorrow night is the night of salah. We know that it is the night when Imam Hussein alayhi and his army were engaged in salah. So inshallah, tomorrow night will be dedicated towards that topic if Allah gives us the tawfiq. If I can ask you to recite as-salawat ala Muhammad wa ala Muhammad. Brothers and sisters, tonight is, as I mentioned, the night of Tasu'a. There was a very great scholar by the name of Muhaqqiq Amini, the author of Al-Ghadir, a very great scholar, a very sincere lover of the Ahlul Bayt alayhim as-salam. They say that when it came to these two nights, the night of Tasu'a and the night of Ashura, that he would take aside a special amount of sadaqah and give sadaqah in the name of the Imam of our time. And when they asked him, why are you doing this? He says that most definitely, the heart of our Imam is grieved in these nights. He is crying, he is shedding tears, he is sad as he remembers and sees and witnesses the events that took place on these days. And as a way of giving sukoon, a way of giving comfort and consolation to the heart of the Imam, he would take out this sadaqah. And we begin this commemoration by sending our salam to the Imam of our time. We ask for his special inayah, his special attention to this gathering that we have here. We are so unworthy, we are so sinful, we are so much in need of the help of our Imam to be able to fulfill our duties towards him. But we hope that through this small effort on our part of attending and participating, inshallah, trying to bring tears to our eyes, that the Imam alayhi salam, that wasila of Allah's mercy, will gaze upon us with a special gaze and have mercy upon us. Hazrat Abbas alayhi salam was the flag bearer. And the flag bearer in the army is somebody who has a very special position. Not an ordinary person is given the flag, because that flag bearer is the center of the army. At all times, when people are confused, they're scattered, they know that there's one center that they can go back to, and that is the flag and the flag bearer. And Abbas alayhi salam was chosen for this position not just because he was the brother of Imam Hussein alayhi salam, but because he was the best of the warriors. Hazrat Abbas alayhi salam was Qamaru Bani Hashim. He was the moon of Bani Hashim. He was somebody that people would look upon and they would be amazed by his beauty, amazed by his physical stature and his appearance. But Hazrat Abbas alayhi salam was more than just a flag bearer for Imam Hussein alayhi salam. He was the very backbone of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. He was a source of support for Imam Hussein alayhi salam. After all, Imam Hussein alayhi salam must have been one who had an incredible impact on the tarbiyah and the raising of Hazrat Abbas alayhi salam. Hazrat Abbas was the one who would always be there for Imam Hussein. Sallallahu alayka ya Aba Abdullah. Sallallahu alayka ya Sayyid al-Shuhada. Ya Safinat al-Najah. صلى الله عليك أيها المقتول بكربلاء عطشانا. Peace and blessings be upon you, our beloved Imam Hussein.
The ship of salvation, the leader of the martyrs, Sayyidu Shababi Ahlul Jannah, the one who was slain on the banks of the Euphrates River while his mouth was thirsty. Peace be upon you and on the noble Shuhada in Karbala. Peace be upon you and upon Abu al-Fadl al-Abbas ibn Amir al-Mu'mineen. الراغب فيما زهد فيه غيره من الثواب الجزيل والثناء الجميل. He was the one who always was striving for the highest of degrees of perfection, the highest ways of serving Allah. He was the one who was always striving to sacrifice the most in the way of Allah. It's the day of Ashura. One by one, the companions have given their lives. And then after them, the Ahlul Bayt. Ali Akbar alayhi salam has gone forward. His body was returned to the camp. Qasim has gone forward. He too was martyred. One by one, the members of the Ahlul Bayt, the nephews, the cousins, the sons, one by one became shaheed. All the while the flag is there, held by the flag bearer, but there comes a point in this battle where Hazrat Abbas alayhi salam goes to Imam Hussein. He tells him, قَدْ ضَاقَ صَدْرِي مِنْ هَؤُلَاءِ الْمُنَافِقِينَ وَأُرِيدُ أَنْ أَخُذَ ثَارِي مِنْهُمْ. My heart has become constricted. I have grown tired of life. Oh Hussein, allow me to seek revenge for the blood of the martyrs. فَبَكَى الْحُسَيْنُ بُكَاءً شَدِيدًا. Immediately Imam Hussein alayhi salam began to weep furiously. يَا أَخِي إِذَا مَضَيْتَ أَنْتَ صَاحِبُ لِوَائِي وَإِذَا مَضَيْتَ تَفَرَّقَ عَسْكَرِي. Oh my brother, you are the bearer of the flag. If you were to go, who would be there in my army? But eventually Abbas alayhi salam is able to convince Imam Hussein. But Imam Hussein alayhi salam gives him a mission. Remember, the sun, the heat. Remember, there is no water. Remember the cries of Al-Atash, Al-Atash. Imam Hussein alayhi salam hears these cries from the children. They are incessant. He tells Abbas that, why don't you fetch some water for these children? Abbas alayhi salam has a mission. How is he going to get that water? He has to make his way to the river. History says that there were between 4,000 and 10,000 soldiers guarding the river. Hazrat Abbas alayhi salam is the son of Amir al-Mu'mineen. He is the warrior that Imam Ali alayhi salam was seeking. He's the answer of the dua of Amir al-Mu'mineen. Somehow Abbas alayhi salam charges the army. He scatters them left and right. Somehow he makes his way to the banks of the river. Finally there he sees the water is in front of him. He fills the water skin, and at this point there comes a choice. Should he drink some water from the river? Is it right for him to do so? Maybe he'll get some strength from the water and fight even better. He cries out, Ya Nafsi, min ba'd al-Husayni huni, min ba'dihi la kunti antakuni, hadha Husaynun sharibu al-manuni, wa tashrabina barid al-ma'ini. هيهات ما هذا فعل ديني ولا فعل صادق اليقين. How can you possibly think of drinking some water when Hussein is surrounded by death? This is not what the religion teaches us. This is not the path of righteousness and truth. I will never drink some water while Hussein is thirsty. And Abbas alayhi salam takes the water skin in his hand. He takes it and strings it over his neck, and now he has the entire army gathered there, wanting to prevent him from making his way back to the tents, back to the children. La hawla wa la quwwata illa billah al-ali al-azim. Abbas alayhi salam is making his way to the army, through the army, he charges at them. How can they possibly stop him? He is like a lion, he's the son of Ali. The only way they can do this is by ambushing him. There is one who is hiding behind a tree. When Abbas alayhi salam passes by, he comes out, he raises his sword. Suddenly we see Hazrat Abbas alayhi salam cries out, Wallahi in qata'atum yamini. Fa'inni uhami abadan an dini. Even if you cut off my right arm, I will never stop defending the religion. وعن إمام صادق اليقين نجل النبي الطاهر الأمين. I will never stop defending that pure Imam, the descendant of the pure Prophet. Imam Hazrat Abbas alayhi salam takes the water skin in his other hand, and now he is fighting only with his left arm. He goes against the army, he is determined to make his way back to the tents, he is determined to make his way back to the children. But after some time, the army surrounds him, and now they know their target is his left arm. Abbas alayhi salam cries out, Ya Nafsi, la takhshay min al-kuffar. Don't fear these kuffar. Wa abshiri bi rahmatil jabbari. The mercy of Allah is very near to you. Ma'an nabi as-sayyid al-mukhtari. Soon you will be in the company of the Prophet. Qad qata'u bi baghihim yasari. They have cut off my left arm in their rebelliousness. Falslim ya Rabbi harranari, O my Lord, enter them into the fire of the hell. At this point, Abbas alayhi salam could have backed off. He could have abandoned the mission. But he knows that there is a command from his Imam. He is determined to fulfill it. Abbas alayhi salam takes the water skin in his teeth. He rushes forward. He has to do the job until the very end. He has perseverance. He is not going to give up. Eventually, though, what can he do without his arms? The enemy takes a mace in his hand. He strikes Abbas alayhi salam. Abbas alayhi salam is falling to the ground. Who are his thoughts occupied with? He cries out, Alayka minni salam, Aba Abdullah. Upon you be peace. My salutations to you, Abu Abdullah. Imam Hussein alayhi salam makes his way. Imagine the scene he sees. His brother is on the ground. In that state, the water has been pierced with an arrow. He cries out, Alan in kasara dhahri. وَقَلَّتْ حِيلَتِي. My backbone has been broken. I have no recourse left.
سلام على الله وعلى القوم الظالمين وسيعلم الذين ظلموا.